I like the joke about adaptive intelligence. That's the other AI that people don't think about. And, you know, when you think about it, it's really the ability to effectively adjust to the changing circumstances. So it's basically like adjust on a dime and be, I guess, cognizant of what's coming.
They keep telling us that it's all over for HR. The age of AI is upon us, and that means HR should be prepared to be decimated. We reject that message. The future of HR won't be handed to us. Instead, it'll be defined by those ready to experiment, adopt, and adapt. Future-proof HR invites these builders to share what they're trying, how it's going, what they've learned, and what's next. We are committed to arming HR with the AI insights to not just survive, but to thrive. Hello and welcome to the Future Proof HR podcast, where we explore how forward-thinking HR leaders are preparing for disruption and redefining what it means to lead people in a changing world. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, CEO of Cleary. And today we have with us Bernard Coleman III, the SVP of People at Swing Education, a longtime people leader with a background spanning presidential campaigns, Silicon Valley scale-ups, and thought leadership in culture and DE&I. And I should note that Bernard also has been doing fractional chief people officer work. And he brings to all of his efforts a pragmatic and systems-oriented view to the AI conversations. He believes HR's relevance depends on getting their own hands dirty with the tools guiding intelligent adoption and architecting systems for real upskilling, not chaos. Bernard, welcome to the podcast.
Thomas, thank you for having me. It is a pleasure.
Excited to have you. And I wanted to dive right in with this concept of the role that HR has to play in empowering the entire organization. So we were sharing around this article, which we'll drop in the show notes, right, about the thrust of it is that HR needs to lead on tech and specifically AI transformation. So what are your takeaways from this article?
Yeah, I think AI obviously is a hot button topic, but I think HR needs to be front and center for this work. When you think about it, I'm seeing a lot of organizations that either from peers or just what I'm seeing in the news, they have a really scattershot approach, like AI everything, get all these AI tools, but it doesn't seem like there's any strategy associated with it. And then I think, which is juxtaposed against, I've also seen HR peers who are afraid, is it going to take my job? Is it going to replace me? And there's just a fear of change. I look at AI as a tool, right? So I think the first step is, if HR is front and center, like investigating, understanding what the tools, the interplay, how it works within your systems. And I think by sitting in the middle of all of that, you could set the strategy for the whole company, right? Because how can I teach if I don't even know what the systems are or how it works? But if HR sits in the middle of it, they can help set the strategy for what's the tools that we're going to use? Are the stipends that we're going to provide? But you're basically setting the nomenclature and the outer boundaries of how it could work at the company. So that way others can then embrace it and make it make sense for your company versus, oh, I'm using Gemini or I'm using Claude or I'm using Copilot. And then the company actually needed you to use Descript. So the whole point is, what's the right tool, understanding what those tools are, and then how do you do those at scale?
Yeah, and that scale is really where it comes in with the coordination problem with HR, because on one end, you mentioned, right, the doom mongering about jobs are going to get shifted or replaced entirely, and there's a real opportunity for HR to come in and bring people along, right, to enable them with the transformation, with the right growth mindset and the classic L&D function, right? It's ready for every knowledge worker is ready for reskilling, and who can do a better job than that HR function to enable that? Really interesting reaction. But then let me ask you a personal question, because you were sharing this with me earlier. How did you personally come across and start using the latest iteration of AI, I should say, which is LLMs in the last couple of years?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's funny. So when my daughter was in 7th or 8th grade, she had to do this like writing project for school, and she was using ChatGPT. And I'm like, what's ChatGPT? I never heard of it. And she's like, well, basically we have to help write an outline. It's going to help us winnow down our outline so that we can write in a more structured way. And I'm like, this is interesting. I said, so she was teaching me, and you know, this is a 7th or 8th grader using ChatGPT. And then after that, I started becoming Let me try to tinker with this and see what it is. And I was like reading articles about how AI, all the gifts and the curses that can come with AI. And I had read an article that somebody was conversing with AI and I said, leave your spouse. And this is talking about all the implications that AI could have. As an HR practitioner, I was like, this is a this is an amazing tool. Like, there's this movie I saw years ago called Limitless. And for those who don't know, it's a guy who's really smart, failure to launch type of guy, but he takes this pill that enhances his intelligence like tenfold for 24 hours, I think. But to me, that's what AI is like. If you're already doing really well, you could help optimize yourself and scale yourself, which are unimaginable, which I think that's pretty amazing. But that all happened from a conversation with my daughter and helping her with her homework. That's how I got introduced to AI.
That's interesting. So then there's writing benefits. So you started messing around with it, but then of course you do what you do. How did that transfer over into just thinking about how it might, if at all, be used in your day-to-day work?
Yeah. So in day-to-day work, like what I do, like I have my own little process, but I'll do like a voice note to my phone. It'll be like disorganized, probably full of typos just because it's capturing every other thing, every other word. But then I'll throw it in one of my favorite AI tools. So like right now it's Claude or Copilot. And I'll say, order this, summarize this, put this into a more logical flow, might be my prompt. And then it organizes it. It's in bullet points. And then I could just spit it out and I can produce things much faster based off a voice note. Another thing I used to do is I like to write notebooks. I like the feeling of writing in notebooks, but sometimes it's just very time consuming converting it from your notebook into the computer, right? So what I do is just like I read my notes, organize it, done. It is an amazing time hack when before I would have actually spent that time. But there's little ways all throughout the day that you can use to hack yourself and find different ways, like writing a policy. You could write really bespoke policy. In the old days, you go to SHRM, they'd have a sample policy. Maybe you modify it. Maybe it still doesn't work for your organization. Now you can get really bespoke with AI and all the different policies it might be pulling from to create the new policy, plus what's your input.
Yeah, any kind of writing job, right? So certainly writing policies, writing job descriptions is a obvious like way to get into it. And then let's talk more about the organization more broadly, right? Because the potential for disruption is not just, and obviously enhancement, right? Or getting limitless is not just for HR professionals. It's obviously the entire org, right? And it's certainly knowledge workers. What does that mean then in terms of the future of the organization itself? One thing you were telling me about was about how adaptive intelligence, it's going to be a core skill going forward. So tell me more about what that means, and especially how do you gain it, or how do you teach it, or how do you enable it, especially from an HR perspective?
Yeah, I like the joke about adaptive intelligence. That's the other AI that people don't think about. And when you think about it, it's really the ability to effectively adjust to the changing circumstances. So it's basically like adjust on a dime and be cognizant of what's coming. So there's cognitive skills, there's emotional intelligence, but it's really trying to navigate all the complexity that's coming. That to me is what adaptive intelligence is. And so you think that about that from the organization perspective, I think that's really important. When we were talking earlier about a lot of organizations are kind of scattershot in their approach. So if we want adoption of AI, what's the best way to do it? And it's effectively a big change management process. So I think you start at the upper levels and say, what are we trying to solve for? What is our problem? And then you work backwards from there. So I mentioned that company that's gave an AI stipend to their company, to their employees, and say, use AI. Well, that's good, and it's engaging people to use it. We don't know what tools help the organization. We don't know if it's to the benefit of the employee. We don't even know if they're learning it, or what if it's underutilized? So there needs to be some form and function to it. So I think you start at the executive level and say, what are we solving? And what is our business model, and how will AI serve that? And then I think you go from there and set the vision there, communicate to the staff, talk about what this program is, what's in it for me, the who, what, when, where, and how, and why. Because I think if you could tell people why this is important and what's in it for me, I'm more likely to adopt it, to engage with it, incentivizing it, because now it's free stuff, it's an employee benefit. And then I think you have to give structure. These are the tools we're using. These are the tools we're using and why. This is why it'll help you do more effective and greater work, so you can focus on the strategic work that you want to do. And I think more, even before that, do we even understand what we're doing? What's the LLM, right? What is artificial general intelligence? Like the terms, what are the terms that we're using? What are the tools that we're using? So I think you almost need to start before you even give out stipends and all that, start at 101. What is AI 101? And take everybody through that. And then maybe class 102 is what are prompts? It's an effective prompt, but like really help people get grok with it. And then once they understand how to use it, then bring out those tools, the approved tools of the organization. Then I think they'll meet people be more adaptive to it. And that to me is adaptive intelligence, thinking about where we're going, how we're going to use it. and then bringing staff along as opposed to kicking and screaming or like directionless where it's like, we're doing AI, but how, why? I think if you can answer that, that is an effective change management process, and that's adaptive intelligence and thinking about how do you successfully implement it so that's to the betterment of your organization or whatever you're trying to achieve.
This has been a fantastic conversation so far. If you haven't already done so, make sure to join our community. We're building a network of the most forward-thinking HR and people operations professionals who are defining the future. I will personally be sharing news and ideas around how we can all thrive in the age of AI. You can find it at gocleary.com/cleary-community. Now back to the show. Yeah, that's interesting. Like, let's talk about like how companies tend to get into this, into these programs. Are you right, I think, in saying this is really a massive change management type of project, right? And once you get to the point at the executive leadership level that you decide, hey, we need to be whatever the buzzword is, AI first or AI forward, or everyone needs to be using AI constantly, and or whatever you end up saying, I guess what you're saying is one way that companies then do, what one thing that companies then do as a next step is say, here's a stipend, or everyone go buy for $10, $20, $50 a month. You can use whatever tool you want and figure out on your own and just give theoretically massive agency to everyone in the organization to just go figure things out. I don't think most companies even get quite to that level, but even if you get to that, I just want to just push back a little bit on the thinking. What if that is the way? Like, what if because the, and what if that is adaptive intelligence? Like, your people need to figure out on their own what tools to use, what workflows they have today, and someone in engineering versus in product versus in sales, it could all be very different, but you're exposing the skill set of adaptive intelligence by people figuring out what tools that would improve like what they're doing. That, I guess, what's a counter argument to that, or what would that leave on the table exactly?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I think if you're going to centralize it, it can't be so rigid where these are the three tools for the entire company. Every department has different objectives. So let's say I'm using an HR for recruiting, for employee sentiment, and something else, or the three big rocks, or three big objectives that we're focused on. But perhaps in engineering, it's a totally different objective. So I do think maybe not at the company level, maybe at the department level, like here's your menu of things that we're going to do. Here's structurally how you should do it, but offer 3 to 5 tools that still align with what you want to do. So that way, I think you create boundaries and then allow people to paint liberally within those boundaries. But I think you do have to set some structure. I often joke, I don't know, for folks have been to Cheesecake Factory, if you go there, it's a delicious experience, but they have a very big menu. Like, you could be flipping through it all day. Like, it's like a book. Like, give me the specials. Give me the specials per department. And so then that way I can go, okay, this is off the specials menu for my respective department. There's still order, but then I still have agency as the person to go and say, I want to go with the strawberry cheesecake, and somebody else could do their whatever flavor of the month that works for them. But there's structure. And you could do that at a systems level. So you can like figure out what works, get people to adopt to it, but not be so scattershot where like someone picked the wrong tool that has nothing to do with anybody's objectives. So I think you do have to provide some order, but people do need agency. So I think that's how you do it. Decide what you're going to do at the ELT level, but let the departments choose what makes the most sense for them, their objectives. So that way they still have that freedom. Because I know otherwise managers might be like, you're handcuffing me here. I had some other tools that I wanted to use, and now you're saying I can only use Gemini. That's not going to work for me. So you have to have some flex in the system.
That's a good point. And maybe, having some specificity at the department level, or boundaries, guardrails at the department level. And maybe it's the classic, just KPIs, OKRs, goal setting. It's really, that's the level you want to just get everyone on. So if, like you said, and everyone in recruiting, it's like we have one step in our funnel that we know is just absolutely wasteful and just kills us. What we want as an objective for the department, what we're trying to figure out is how can we improve this one step like in our funnel? That's a core goal. And then go off and, let's figure it out. Or that's the goal. Use whatever tools or use one of these three tools to help figure out this particular problem. So almost prioritizing and clarifying what are the key bottlenecks and things that you want to improve in the company, at least getting alignment there, it's useful. But then as I say that, I think what you're pointing out is the skill set gap. So you might have the objective. Maybe people don't know what a prompt is, right, on the team. So how do we bridge that gap? And I think you said a little bit about how we're talking about the HR function. If you're going to enable the others and what's the HR function doing itself. But how do you, because I think it's perfectly normal, right? When the iPhone first came out, like there were no, you know, there were not many like experts in software engineering who knew how to develop for mobile with 5 years of experience, because it just literally didn't, it wasn't a thing, right? So like right now in every HR department, the vast majority of people are not skilled in many things associated with these tools, right? So how do we instill those kind of skills?
Yeah, you know, that's a hard one, because I do think there's some folks, I see some folks really leaning into the HR community, like, how can I use all these different tools to automate workflows? And there's a lot of excitement. Then I think there's other people who are like, I don't trust that tool whatsoever. I don't know anything about it. And so I think what I would start with my own team is like, well, what are we going to use and why? We're like the who, what, when, where, how, and why. So like, why are we even using these tools? And so really explaining, and like, I like to share my stream of consciousness with my team. This is why I'm doing this. This is why this is important. So I think when you give people a lot more context, they're like, okay, that makes sense. It's not trying to take my job. It's trying to help me be better. And then secondly, then you're going to say, look, let's learn together. Maybe we do like some team sessions where we learn about what all the terms mean. Because like I've gone to other companies where it's like you need a thesaurus and a dictionary and all the things to even keep up with. This is AAR, ACV. You're like, what are all these terms? Like, I can't keep up. Like, you need a glossary, really. But I think if you set the terms, here's the glossary, and we all kind of baseline and set, this is the common language that we're all going to use. You learned as a team, right? You could ask those questions out loud, and it doesn't feel so distant or far off. And then I think if you're the HR team, now you've embraced it. Now you're more informed. You might be the L&D team. Now when you go out and, you know, do the instructional design, you can build coursework that makes sense for adult learners to get everyone on the same page. So they could still at the department level find the AI tools, but at least we're using the common language, because all the prompt engineering and all those different terms apply to all the AI tools.
Right.
And then I think people are more comfortable tinkering, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking about how this could work for my job. This is something that always slowed me up. How can I scale myself? Then I think that works. But I think the main thing is making sure people feel comfortable and understand the context as to why. I think what I'm seeing from a lot of organizations is people don't understand the context. They understand the urgency. We got to go do it tomorrow. I'm not sure why we're doing it tomorrow and what it's going to actually do. But I think if people can articulate that, and I think oftentimes HR is the messenger, articulating the why and doing the implementation and the execution of it, then I think that's a better process to then get to the tooling, the output, and the execution.
You're talking about some of these general concepts that is probably valuable for anyone, for example, in HR, but anyone in a knowledge worker like setting. So then my mind goes to, if you believe everyone needs to know the glossary of TLAs, I like to say the three-letter acronyms, right, for our particular company or our industry, where do we stick it? If you're proactive about it, you put it in an onboarding program, right? Day one, or you know, in the first month or week, everyone learns these set of things, and that helps people grok the organization and how you like kind of work. Yeah, do you imagine that just, I don't know, general AI skilling or some version of that gets even a bit more tailored to a company is going to be a part of an onboarding program? Have you ever seen that, or do you see that coming up?
Yeah, I have seen it. When I used to work at the Society for Human Resource Management years ago, brick and mortar building, you go in and do you know how to use Microsoft Word? And you're like, I don't. And they could take you through a class that they offered there. Live session. I don't know that it scales for every organization, but you could do a virtual version of it. You could have, you know, LMS that allows you to take the coursework, but it offered, like, I know a lot of times when people work in a Slack environment, they're like, oh, I only know Microsoft Teams, or I only know Slack. And they're like, I don't know how to use it. But we expect them like on day one to just jump into it. But we know when people onboard, that's where you're like the least busiest, like this first couple of weeks, where everyone is also giving you grace and allowing you to learn and get up to speed. So that's when you should say, hey, here's onboarding, like, here's our staff list, here are holidays, blah, 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 blah. Here's the AI tools that we use. But before you get to our tools, we want you to understand this common language. And then I've already got it from day one. I feel supported. I feel set up for success because it's not all murky. I don't have to go search for it.
Wow.
That was really easy. That was a great onboarding process. And then you just keep reinforcing. Then maybe there's like at the 6-month mark, hey, there's this tool that's coming out. Come to this session. We're going to be offering 3 modules or whatever it is, but it makes it more approachable versus you don't know Slack. You better figure it out. I don't know that I'd be like, I wonder how this is going to go my rest of the time at this company versus here are all the tools. They're really accessible. You want to be taught how to use it. You can learn on your own time. Whatever you need to do, it's here for you. I think that's how you kind of passively or even aggressively help people get on track to what you want them to do as it relates to the tooling at your organization. And it meets them where they are, as opposed to like this very rigid way of going about it. So I think that, to me, the smarter way is the path of least resistance, by saying, here's this approachable way to embrace these AI tools and what we do here at X company.
Yeah, as your daughter's generation comes into the workforce, like, they're going to be AI native in some ways, or you're just using these things while your brain is like still forming, and just like the way previous generations like grew up Googling or knowing how to like make a phone call. Now that's the most complicated thing, but I wonder if even beyond just at a company onboarding level, are we going to be at a place where, you know, societally, for every knowledge worker, it's almost like to some degree the responsibility for every company, anytime someone comes into a new role, to get some like fundamental education about how to use like AI just to get people up to speed, just because it's fundamentally different in how you might approach any particular kind of problem. So yeah, I wonder if there's, I don't know, 5 or 10 year timeline or horizon, there's the way you just do work is going to be so different that it's a responsibility almost of every organization to bring people along, even selfishly, but then that's needed at a societal level to keep the workforce employable.
Yeah, I think it's going to have a high adoption rate. You need everybody in. I think the other thing about it is, like, we want people to have the AI fluency, right? And how do you increase adoption? By making it accessible as possible. So I need as many on-ramps as possible. As a new employee, as I'm upskilling, at the end of the day, like, the message is, I'm investing in you and making sure you're successful, right? So that's what's in it for me. But I also think is, the more we all participate, the better we make the systems, right? Like, you know, the other topic I've been thinking about lately is like AI ethics, right? There's all these ethics that are associated with, like, how are we using it? How are we using it responsibly? By including more and more people, I now have their input. So not only are they training and learning how to use the tools and they know the vocabulary, they might be saying, I don't think we should do that here. Or I think we should build some guardrails. And I become more informed in how I use it because I've actually engaged with it versus never having used it, but saying all the things you should or should not do, but not being informed. By engaging with it, I think you have a more informed perspective to help make it better. And I think, to your point, 5 to 10 years from now, like, then I'm not going to say it's going to be perfect, but I think with more input, it will be much better.
Absolutely. But then the technology itself will keep changing in that time. So we'll always be keep playing catch up. But let me ask you $1 million question then. There's this company that is interested at the exec level in ensuring that everything is more efficient and people are using AI and magically are in this new world. How do you pitch an AI-driven L&D program internally, whether it's onboarding or otherwise, especially when in practice, what ends up happening is like the response is it's too early or budgets are tight, or yeah, we'll just have managers have a little stipend to do whatever they can do, and we've got these other things to focus on. Because does it boil up to the point of being urgent, or and should every company really be investing in this direction or to some degree? And how do you actually get the team to buy in on a L&D program like this?
That's the hard part, because I think I've been in environments where they say we have these robust learning and development offerings, but the company offers no time to take it. When you're like, okay, what's the incentive for me to go do? And
you got your weekends, right?
Right. You know, you got your weekends, right? Well, I don't want to spend time with your family, but you should be working on it. So it's just, right. So what was the point of all this robust L&D infrastructure if no one's going to take it? So I think you have to incentivize it in the right way. One organization I worked for, which was really cool, was badges. So it was gamification in the intranet. If you took these courses, you'd see the badge. And then that badge was like a bragging rail. Oh, I got badge 101. And everyone could see it whenever you went on the internet. Like, you could, as you drill down the org chart. So let's say you see the CEO, you could see in his profile that he took in all his directs. And you just keep drilling down, you'd see all their badges. And I found that a lot of us were like, I want to get that badge. And then so it was so good that those badges, you could even put it on like LinkedIn and say, I'm certified in X, Y, and Z. So people are incentivized to go and take the coursework just because of we talked about upskilling, but like now I'm more marketable, right? So whether I'm at an X organization or Y organization, I now have a badge in engineer prompts, a badge in workflows, but whatever the badge is, like now I'm more marketable. And so people are incentivized out of self-interest to go do it. But I think in terms of the organizations making time for it, like I think that's going to have to be, you have to say, hey, everybody gets one day a week to do this for retraining and upskilling. So maybe it's an offering where people can all show up, because I find people show up if others will, because out of accountability, like going to the gym, if your trainer's waiting for you and you're already paying for it, you're going to like, I'm going to go, I'm going to skip. But you have to figure out ways to like help people get there versus saying, I'm going to skip it today. You're right. There has to be a level of commitment. And then I think if it's important to my boss, then of course it's important to me. Like you can make it happen. But you have to put all those structures in place to help encourage it.
So given your background in different types of organizations, from highly regulated industries and organizations to like fast moving startups, how would you adapt this general counsel you're giving, right? Like how does it shift? You're just thinking through the different types of organizations, if someone's like listening and saying, yeah, my org is like this, right? Or that's for the whatever, the companies that sell AI, they're the ones who are going to be like using it. Yeah. Or would you think it's actually different? Like the needed rate of adoption or the amount of investment in L&D or like upskilling and reskilling?
I think it's definitely going to be, it depends. So if you're a highly technical workforce and there's a great deal of area for automation that doesn't occur, like to me, yes, you should be automating and figuring out ways to improve your existing workflows, especially if it saves you time, money, and then you could focus on more of the strategic work. So I always say kind of work backwards, like what are we trying to solve for? I think that's the real thing that I say is the issue is like people don't know what they're solving for. I just want it because it's shiny and new. I need all that AI. But what are you going to go do with it? Like, I don't know, but I want it. I don't know if that's a strategy. So the strategy is if I have this AI tool, it will make us this much more productive. Or that's the thesis, right?
Yeah. Can I just answer that straw man? Like the board that's in the leadership team's mind, that's just like saying, I need the AI. I need the AI. What they're saying is, yeah, I want our cost structure to shift. So we want to do twice as much work at the same kind of cost so that our revenues will grow. And I believe, or I think, or I've been sold or I've been exposed to the idea that with these quote shiny tools, we'd be able to just do like way, way more, right? Than we're already doing. So let's do that.
Okay.
Magic fairy dust. Let's make that happen.
So, okay. So now we have to increase output by 2x, but decrease overhead, right? So, okay. So,
right.
So I think we know what the problem we want to solve. We want to decrease overhead. So then I would look at the departments that are primed for automation. Like, and so that's going to be some changes. Like we have to make those are going to be some design choices that have some pros and cons. So I think at the executive level, like we're figuring out, maybe one level down below that, it's like figuring out where are those areas that we know. Because you know, over time, like certain areas, like this is totally manual work. We should not be spending our time doing that. So I think that's the low-hanging fruit. And I will go after those. I would say this is how we can get it down to get to our target. Because there should be a numeric target that we're getting at. So let's say, hey, we're gonna save $5 million. So now you're working back from that $5 million mark and we say, and these are the tools that we know can do it. Because a lot of AI, a lot of folks say it can work. And then people go and say, and then we bought it. And then it was a whole different story. So,
and you do need to have some slack in the system for experimentation and things to go wrong and slowly get there while you build the capacity, right?
Right. I mean, because there's going to be some hits and misses. And then you got to qualify that these things can actually do what they're going to do. Because some of them can and some of them are awesome, right? And so you do have to have patience for that process, like have a reasonable timeline. You say we want to get $5 million, you know, by Q1. You're like, that's a mighty, mighty, mighty big ask, right? Mm-hmm. So like, it needs to be a realistic goal, but attainable. So I think what I would do is focus on the numerical target that I'm shooting for. I would look across all the departments and figure out like, where's the automation opportunities, or the places where it could just be like, we're going about this all wrong, or what's my configuration. So then once we have that kind of working statement, then I think you can start contextualizing, explaining why we're doing this to everyone. Like, so we're trying to save $5 million. We think we increase output by 2x. This would be a game changer for our business because we can go do a series B raise if we show the market that we're doing this well, right? It's going to require us all to learn how to even use it. And I said, we're going to have an L&D offering that everyone's required to take within the first 6 months. You could do it whenever you need to. It's not all tomorrow, but you have 6 months to complete it. You could take it live. or you could take it in you could take it live, or you could take a virtual one. But we need to know everyone. We had to get on the same language to first hit our 5 million goal. And then your department lead is going to figure out the tools that you're going to use to help you get there, because we've identified these areas of automation where there's opportunity. Because, like, again, being budget driven, also that's going to drive what tools you're picking per department. Who's going to get what, right? Because you can't say, like, back to that scattershot approach, if everybody has every area in the tool, how much are we paying for this? What's our upper limit? Because we never said, like, you know, but if you say there's a stipend, okay, so we know upper limit. So let's say the stipend says it will never exceed $300,000. At least that's your budget. But
it's hard to map that to an outcome, to the $5 million saved necessarily without thinking that through the middle steps.
Yeah. So you have to really, like, step by step, identify what we're doing, how we're going to do it, how we're going to hit these cost goals and stay within budget and stay within that, so we don't have mission creep. And so now at the department level, okay, these are the three tools we know that will work. I've done the calls. We stacked it up against others. We know it can do what it's going to do. And you're really just going step by step by step until it gets down to the individual contributor as to how they're going to do it. But I think that's the thoughtfulness that sometimes is lacking. I think sometimes the excitement is to move fast and break stuff. But I would say move fast and bring everyone along, and don't break your product or whatever the widget you're putting out there. So I think if you move fast and bring everybody together, then you're going to have a higher adoption rate. You could hit your $5 million target because you're all rowing in the same direction versus, yeah, we're all doing AI, but we're going completely different directions. And they were like, why didn't we save $5 million? Because we didn't have a $5 million plan. Like, you got to have a plan to get there. And that's, like, the thoughtfulness. Even if you go back to my example, when my daughter's writing the outline and how do you winnow down? Like, we're back to winnowing down to how you get there, and everybody knows their part in there and how they're going to achieve. And then you can track it. We know we want to save $5 million. We know what the stipend's going to be. We know the tools that we're going to use. We know how much time has been allotted. We know we can look in the LMS and we can see how many people are actually even taking the trainings, and you can see, is it being adopted? I can look in engagement surveys and do people feel better about AI? So I have all these different measures to say, is it working? And then hopefully, like, your thesis is correct. We've increased output and now we're dominant in our market based upon these things that we did. And you could point back all these proof points that we did this, and this. And we believe that impacted our product and our output by this much because we did these things. That's, to me, the smart way to go about it versus, like, get all the tools. And then we're like, did it work? I don't know. I can't, because if you do it that way, you can't conclusively point at anything. You just say, I think it worked.
Okay, so there's a couple of things in there, but I want one quick follow-up because you just mentioned it. There's, like, this, it's almost like a solution to a problem that has been on my mind, which is that we know that from a broad employee-based standpoint, there is, like, this malaise or doomsday scenario around AI, that there's, like, this sentiment that is palpable, I would say, out there, right? That this thing is, my job is gone, or it's going to be completely different, and I'm, like, working scared. And so there's a sentiment there. So you said something there about actually how within a program, we're talking about L&D programming from HR, but even if you didn't have that, getting a sense of the sentiment about AI and, like, the sentiment of the employee base towards AI and seeing if that would shift could be a very important one, right? Associated with outcomes with an L&D program associated with that. I just wanted to double click on that because I don't know, that's not a standard question, right, that you're, like, thinking about, but maybe it needs to be more standard about, or maybe there's a more generalizable way to talk about just your feelings towards your role and the where it's headed in the future. Maybe there's some proxies, but having something very specifically about your feelings towards AI and your job, is it an enabler or you're fighting against it? There's probably something, like, might come to the fore as something more standard in employee surveys.
I think so. Like, you know, I admit it's not one that I've asked. It's usually, what's the net promoter score? Your sense of belonging, your connection to our mission. I'm thinking about, like, employee stickiness and retention from that standpoint. But I do think it's an interesting question that could have proxies, or you could ask it, you know, on the nose, because then I can measure and say, like, since we implemented this and then we've asked this question quarter over quarter, we've seen an increase or decrease based upon the following actions that we took. And then we can conclusively say, yes, this is a factor in a team by team, right? This team really embraced it. This team is totally running from it. I think it'd be instructive for, in terms of, and then putting HR back in it. HR would be, like, distilling that and saying, Joe Blow in your department, looks like everyone's afraid of it. Things that we can do to get in front of it. Or maybe there's something the manager's doing. Like, your manager seems to be making, like, you're fired or else. You could find out, like, where there's smoke. Right. And so I think that's a question people should ask if you're really trying to find out the efficacy of AI and its adoption at your workplace versus just saying, have at it, figure it out. That's, again, to me, that's not a good strategy, because then I don't know if it worked or not. I'm just guessing.
And in some ways, it's a proxy to the higher level concept that you mentioned, which is about the other AI, right? The adaptability index. So if that's almost like going back to that straw man board argument that I had, which is we need an AI ready workforce and we want to save a lot of dollars and we're going to be future ready. And there's like a way to translate that into something. Yeah, we are getting to be future ready as a workforce through some of these data points. But the other follow-up I had for you, which I think is super important, is we talked a little bit about the planning and the strategy around knowing what you want to do. And then ultimately, you want to translate that into work streams and you're put yourself in the position where you're talking with your direct reports or the individual contributor who is not as well-versed in AI. How do you have that conversation? So what does that look like to, and let's keep it within an HR context, right? For an HR individual contributor or, you know, an HR generalist or a people ops person, what does that conversation look like to get them rolling, get them going, to get them feeling what you are about? I'm trying all these things on my personal side. I've done a couple things myself. We have a goal here also. And how do you bring them along?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think there's something in communications, three touches, like three-way, you touch them three times with this communication before it sticks. Sometimes it takes more than three. So I'd first do it at the group level. Like maybe I do a people team offsite and I'll say, here are our three big rocks for the year. These are things we're focused on. One of them is AI enablement. Then I share my stream of consciousness. This is what AI enablement means to me. And then to your point about, I think if you model it, your team will mirror it, because you're like, I'm almost giving permission. Like, look, I'm doing it. You can do it too. And I'm saying, I'm using these tools. This is how it's helped me. So now like you're going, okay, that seems more approachable. But then even though you share the larger context for your team, there might be one or two people like, I'm still not messing with that.
Right.
ChatGPT, not for me. So then now you're down to one-to-ones. Hey, what'd you think about our team offsite? And the challenge I put towards the team to figure out the tools, these are the three tools we're going to use because it's going to help us for our snag, our top of funnel. And that's understanding sentiment better in terms of like reconciling all the comments and our total rewards tooling, whatever it is, right? And they go, I don't know. I would say this is going to be part of everyone's development plan. So that's not so I'm just picking on it, everybody. Universally, I'll ask everyone, like, what's this part of your, I would almost put in your development plan. Here's what you did well over the last quarter or half year, whatever, how long, you know, people's, what the cadence is for performance management. But this is what you did. This is how you did it. This is what I like to see over the next 6 months. So I'm codifying it. I said to the team, we're all doing this. I'm talking about it one-to-one. How's that developing? And then I'm codifying it in performance reviews. Like, we talked about this 6 months ago, but we're going to use Gemini, Manus, and Perplexity. How's that going? And the person come back, I did take the classes that this company offered. I finished that. I got the badge. I'm more comfortable. I'm adding into my workflows, but like I'm reaffirming it and holding them accountable. And it's not like I asked them to do it all overnight. I told them, this is my expectation of you. I'm asking it our one-to-ones. And then I'm assessing for it in performance reviews. And that's fair because the employee had all the time to know it, that this is important to me, that I'm using it. This ties back to our company objectives. They understand all the context. If they're still rejecting it, now that's a skill or will problem, right? Like either you don't have the skill to do what I'm asking you, or it's the will, probably the will at this point. So these are the tools of the world. If you don't want to be part of this, you're going to get left behind. And that's a choice. That's a design choice. But I can promise you that AI is going to continue to develop and grow. If you don't grow with it, it could impact your career here and anywhere else you go. And so it's not a threat. It's just, this is what's happening.
Right.
And so it's just like a carpenter, like, there's a better drill, but they're like, I refuse to use this drill. Like, that's a choice, but somebody might outproduce you and take your business from you because they use all the new tools. Those are choices and there's repercussions. So that's how I'd lead it. But like, I would do it in a more humanistic way, but I'm like, look, I want you to embrace these tools. And that's why I'm trying to tee it up this way so you can be successful. That's how I try to get to that person.
Thank you for going through that in detail. And it speaks to the experience you've had with these kinds of conversations. And it also shines through when like your own actual belief in how you're spending your time and what you honestly believe that you're doing the best for you, the organization, and this particular person in terms of future-proofing their skills, which is what we're all about. So then if you zoom out and look at the function and where it's all like headed, with all this in mind about AI literacy, what does it look like for HR to own AI literacy across the organization? If it really does, this vision that really does come to fruition, right? What are you, what does that organization look like? Or what is the beats in a month, quarter, year that are signals that, okay, this vision of HR owning AI literacy and enabling that directly is coming to fruition in a given organization?
It's a good question. I think it should go with the people planning process, right? So if you think about the people planning process, there's capacity planning for like how many hires you think are going to make this year, quarter over quarter. I usually look at org health, you know, what does retention look like? Is your retention high, low, right where it should be? What does progression look like? Are you people progressing relative to the rest? You know, everyone should be moving at a similar clip, right? Mm-hmm. Then like you look at engagement scores, like are people having a good experience? I think in the people planning process, there's a learning and development component when you think about progression. And then I would be working with the leaders and say, okay, we know we have this AI directive. We know that we're going to have certain tools. How are you helping enabling that in your team? So like you're getting the manager to take ownership of how they want to direct their teams and their growth. So that way, like you can help them with the structure. You can help them with the L&D component, like putting the right things in place for those folks to engage with it. But it should be part of the people planning process, just like you would do any other org health, because progression is important. People care about internal mobility. People want to grow in their companies. And people want to know, what does it take to get to the next rung? Like looking at competencies, like it might be say AI fluency is how you get to be a manager. Tying it all back to that manager and their understanding of it will then help them, again, codify and reinforce it. So that way folks are like, across the organization, everyone's AI fluent, right? And so you could just build it into the process, but that's how I would approach it.
Love it. So as we wrap up then, how can people follow your thinking or connect with you, Bernard?
You can catch me on LinkedIn, or I have a website, www.bernardcoleman.com. You can reach out there. I have lots of light thoughts and musings that I write for Inc. and other places, my Substack, which I'm just tinkering with, but yeah, check me out.
Love that. So thank you so much for this conversation and taking us through your personal journey of how you're just being introduced to this thing from the next generation, which I think is almost prescient for how things are going to go. And we talked a lot about how there's this place, there's almost like a promised land, this vision for what HR can really be in terms of enabling AI literacy in the organization. But then you kind of broke it down to how it kind of needs to come from within. And you need to, one key takeaway I had was that if you're going to be in L&D in the future, like you need to be steeped in these tools, because what you're going to be asked to do more than likely will be enabling AI literacy at some level, and at least at some part of what you do. So just doing it yourself is a key takeaway, and it's free and easy to get started. It's the will should be there. You can develop the skill, but I like how you broke down how we can think about it from a board and executive level in terms of planning for any these kind of initiatives, all the way down to how you might actually enable the most reticent of a team members towards getting the skill sets and providing value that actually tie back to the organization. And it's a time of change, right? So I think it's great to hear a perspective on just embracing it and knowing that the future is going to continue changing, right? And this is the way to future-proof yourself. So thank you for that. It's a really interesting conversation, Bernard. And we'll put in a couple of those links in the show notes so you folks can connect with and follow Bernard. And with that said, to everyone out there who is looking to future-proof their own organization, HR or otherwise, good luck and follow along as we help you thrive in the age of AI. Bye now. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Future-Proof HR. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to or watching us on, or share this with a friend or colleague who may find value in the message. See you next time as we keep our pulse on how we can all thrive in the age of AI. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slackbot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. just head on over to goclery.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, goclery.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.